You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Hour two of Miller and Moulton on this Friday. The Masters resumes in 45 minutes. Nine threesomes were out on the course when play was suspended early in the evening yesterday. So they will finish things up and then get right in to round two to try to get everybody in today. It'll be close. It will be close whether or not everybody gets their round in today or not. I would think they could do it, right? I mean, because you got everybody, they're starting on the back, right?
Right.
So I read
that round two tee times are, I mean, they're starting at 7:30 or whatever, 7:45 with the resumption of play, 7:45. Right. But I thought they were starting with 8 o'clock with tee times.
Yeah.
With round two tee times, that is.
Right. So, you know, so the Masters is planning on, you know, getting everybody done today so that they don't have to come back early Saturday morning and finish. DeChambeau, the one shot lead. Scheffler lurking at 6 under. And the leader on the course is 5 under through 15. Tiger, 1 under through 13. First things first, let's see him make the cut. And then go from there. Hey, listen, I know you got a lot going on today. You know, you're co-hosting the show, your executive producer, your chief engineer. I mean, you know, you're sweating through your golf shirt, which you then have to dry out before you play golf later today. I mean, you got a lot of responsibility.
Okay.
But can I make you and I feel better about ourselves?
Yeah.
Okay. So this Mizuhara guy,
right?
The interpreter. Did you spend any time yesterday? I mean, it's a busy day yesterday. You got things with your daughter. The Masters is on. OJ died. So we've got all those Norm McDonald jokes that we had to rewatch. I mean, so I don't know. Did you pay attention and read what the feds released yesterday about Mizuhara?
Just that it was the $16 million. I didn't get into what he was gambling on in the individual bets and of the like.
He made 19,000 bets with Ohtani's money. 19,000 bets. He won $142 million with those bets. He lost $183 million with those bets. That's $41 million in the hole. So here's my question. If he stole $16 million from Ohtani and he lost $41 million, how did he come up with the $25 million? Because supposedly his salary was $300,000. This reminds me of like congressmen and women. They go to Congress, their net worth is $831. By their ninth term in Congress, their net worth is $13 million. It's like, that's pretty amazing. You guys are making $300,000 to $400,000. That's remarkable. How'd you guys pull this off? Man, your savings account must pay great rates. So that's my first question, Mark. Where's the $25 million come from? Help me out here.
How many bets did he make?
19,000.
I want everybody to think about that. Because even if you are the degenerate gambler.
Yes.
And you like action. Do you know how much action that is? That's just blindly betting games to bet games. Hey, I'll throw $500,000 on this and $100,000 on this.
Apparently, he really liked his soccer, all right, and bet the NBA and the NHL hard. According to the feds, not a single bet placed on baseball. Not one. Listen, they got dialogue. They have texts and emails between Mizuhara and the bookie.
That's my favorite one. Where he sent the text to the bookmaker. Have you seen the reports? The bookmaker responds, yeah, but that's all BS. Obviously, you didn't steal from him. I understand it's a cover job. To which he responds, technically, I did steal from him. It's all over for me.
According to the complaint, because there's a lot of questions here. I don't know how I steal from you, Mark. I don't know how I go through your bank and get money out of your account. I don't know how to do it. Apparently, Mizuhara knows how.
I think I could get into your phone and steal some of your money. And I'm not being a jerk. I think you would try. Hey, David, I need your code to your phone, and I got to text myself something.
Okay, here's a question. Do you think you could do it and then start stealing from me and hide it from me the entire time?
No.
Okay.
No, that's the part where I get confused.
Right. According to the feds, he has admitted to changing the settings so that all of the notifications went to Mizuhara and not Ohtani. Okay, even Ohtani's agent was unaware. I mean, I don't know. If I'm Ohtani, I got to get rid of everybody around me, don't I?
Yes.
Don't I have to start anew? I mean, don't I turn everything over to my wife? I just got married. I mean, honestly, who am I trusting? Charles Schwab or my wife? Who am I going with?
I would be getting a new agent. I would.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I kid you not. There is a paragraph in the complaint that reads, Mizuhara called the bank and identified himself as Ohtani to authorize wire transfers from the account to people involved in the illegal gambling operation. When asked how he did it, he said, I called up and said, hey, this is Ohtani. I need to send this money. And the bank went,
okay, huh?
Okay. Come on. If this was our dialogue in a movie script, would this movie get made?
No. No, I actually, you know, it reminds me, I had a friend who wrote a book when he was in college, and he did a nice job. And I remember there was a mob part of it, and I'm like, you didn't do any research, did you? You just used all the mob movies you watched, and that's where this mob stuff comes from. And that's kind of what this doesn't make any sense.
So, listen, I am good at math. Like, I'm not good at a lot of things. I'm good at math. There's $25 million missing from this story. I would like to know where it is. Because this just in, the illegal bookmakers don't write off $25 million in losses. Okay? They may kill someone over $25 million in losses, but they don't write it off. That's number one. Somebody explain to me where the $25 million is. And did Mizuhara pay? So he paid the $25 million in losses, but not the 41. The other 16, he had to steal from Ohtani. He only had $25 million. Gotcha. 19,000 bets, man. Over a year and a half. That's like 1,000 bets a month.
It's tough to do.
It's 1,000. So what, you know, how do we do that? Divvy it up by day. I mean, I guess it's
35
bets a day.
30 a day?
30 a day. Every day, though.
Every day
for 18 months. You're making 3 dozen bets a day.
A day.
A day. Apparently, and, you know, like, these are not $50 bets either. Apparently, like, you know, he bet at least $1,000. Every bet was at least $1,000. Yeah. This is something. There's a part of me. Because the media will not just buy the story. They won't. They are going to go through this story. They're going to continue to investigate this story. The New York Times, ESPN, the LA Times, they're not just going to accept the feds at their word. They're not. They have to right now because they don't have any proof that what they're saying is not true. But they're not going to stop. people are going to keep digging in on this story.
The hell of a credit line that bookie ran.
Just, man.
And you don't think that the bookie thought maybe at one point with that big of a debt, he'd have something on Ohtani, huh?
Well, apparently, according to the texting, at one point, Mizuhara is like, listen, you know, I need a little bit more. And the bookie's like, I need $500,000 in like 3 hours or this ends. And apparently the illegal bookie was at an event with Ohtani. And he said, he's standing right here. Either you get me $500,000 right now or I'm going to go up to Ohtani.
And say what? Your translator owes me millions?
Yeah, I guess. So.
Or do you have a good feeling about tonight's San Jose Sharks game? What exactly was the bookie going to say to Ohtani?
I don't know. But the bookie was basically saying the guy he has to answer to is not extending any more credit. I need money. I need it now. Apparently, the illegal bookmaker said he had like taken a lot of money out of his own account to pay this guy's gambling debts so that he could keep, because this guy was losing so much money and he knew he was good for it. So he was fronting him and you know, covering his butt and letting him rack up more and more debt. Now, this is a hell of a movie. It really is. Now, it's going to be a B movie, but it's a hell of a movie. You don't pay to see movies anymore. They put this into a movie. You going?
Well, this will get released right to Netflix, so I'm in. This doesn't make it to the silver screen, if you know what I'm saying. It's a made-for-TV movie.
I mean, this is rounders only involving baseball, right?
Exactly. And apparently hockey, basketball, and soccer as well.
Right. So, anyway, I thought it'd make us feel better about ourselves.
That's a lot of bets. That's a lot of losses.
$41 million in 18 months. It's like $2.33 million a month. It's like $75,000 a day. I mean, nobody better call us Moosh ever again.
Ever again, David.
You know who's Moosh? Mizuhara. Mizuhara Moosh.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for being with us on this Masters Friday, this Football Friday. Quite a few other things going on as well. Jeff Eisenbrand, he will join us in a little more than 15 minutes. We'll talk about round one, which is not yet complete, and round two of the Masters, what he saw yesterday, what he's anticipating today. Pat Kerwin at the top of the hour. C.W. Lambert, a little more than an hour. He's on because he had a story late Wednesday into Thursday that ESPN behind the scenes is trying to broker a deal between Florida State, Clemson, and the ACC, in which Florida State and Clemson would go to the SEC. And financially work it out and all that. And, you know, let's just, you know, play nice, boys. And so it leads to our poll question today. If you were Florida State, what conference would you go to? Big Ten or SEC? That Mark Miller, the David Moulton on X, Miller underscore Moulton on X. Mark, if you were Florida State, where would you go?
I'd go to the Big Ten because I'm so honked off at ESPN and the SEC.
I would go to the Big Ten for two reasons. One, right now and for the rest of the decade, it's more money in the Big Ten than it is in the SEC. The schools are getting more annually from the conference in the Big Ten than they are the SEC. That's number one. And number two, I actually think Florida State would be valued in some way in the Big Ten. That the Big Ten would look at them and even their fans would say, well, that gets us into Florida. You know, that's good for the conference.
Big Ten fan out there, 21,000 is the text line. Would you rather have Florida State or have them go to the SEC?
So I'm with you, Mark. We agree on this one. We both would vote for Big Ten over SEC. Obviously, ESPN has no share in the Big Ten anymore. So if this story is true and if they're working, they're going to want Florida State to stay on their network. In the ACC, they're on their network. In the SEC, they're on their network. They go to the Big 12, they share the Big 12 with Fox. They go to the Big 10, they have no share in it at all. None. Zip, zilch, nada. So, you know, DC in our Twitch chat room says if they go to the Big 10, they'd be marginalized. Any more marginalized than they were in December? I mean, I don't think they'd be any more marginalized in the Big Ten or SEC than they were 4 months ago.
The only thing that I wonder if you're Florida State, you know, the more money is great. How much would you spend traveling in your other sports that you wouldn't spend if you were in the SEC? How much do they value their other sports? Or is it all football, which we know that it is, but.
Here's my thing. Let's just say it's a couple million more in travel. Is that fair?
Okay.
They make more than that going to the Big Ten than they do the SEC. And the Big Ten right now generates 10 or more million a year per school from their deal than the SEC gets from theirs.
You know, I think for USC and UCLA, it would help the Big Ten's baseball profile getting Florida State on board.
It's going to be tough, isn't it, for the next year or so to tell some of these conference jokes? Like, you had to turn away from me. You had to turn away and damn near put your hand to your face. Just these conference college jokes, they're good for the next year, aren't they?
They are, and, you know, there was that, what was it, the Tomorrow League? The college sports tomorrow?
Yes.
That wants to have a super league of college athletics. And with the way conferences are, I have to say that proposal looks more and more solid to me by the day. Because this is going to start looking awkward when we have ACC games with Cal and Miami.
Well, you know, we just got a tweet from someone that said, I can't wait for the bitter conference game between Oregon and Florida State. And right, I mean, we're going to have that this year. You know, when Stanford and NC State go at it, I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be vicious. There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. That is why, though, to be serious for a second, if I'm Sankey, I really don't want to expand. Do I have to expand? I really think you've reached maximum density right now if you're the SEC. You're like, no, uh-uh. Yeah, I don't necessarily – I really don't want the Big Ten in our footprint. But you know what? I don't want to go bigger than 16. I don't. And Florida State and Clemson, particularly Florida State, adds more to the Big Ten than they add to us. We're already in these states.
It's what you said earlier, David. It's a matter of Sankey wants to keep them out of Florida. I think Clemson's just an add-on in this thing. Clemson, maybe I'm on my own here, but Clemson adds nothing to me, to the Big Ten. Not a damn thing.
Now, would you have said that if this is 2015 through 2019 Clemson? When they were making the playoff every year and they were playing for the Natty most every year. Would that change your tune about, you know?
Slightly, but I still don't think that when you're that good and you're still not the most popular team in your own state, Clemson's not and never has been a national draw. They've had a moment in the sun.
Florida State does still move the needle.
You're damn right they do.
They do. More so than Clemson did a few years ago when they had their great run under Dabo. And by the way, some people think Clemson's going to be really good this year. We'll see. Dabo, once again, I think brought in no one in the portal.
So I really hope this works out, because I'm worried about Clemson going forward. I'm wondering if Clemson's going to go down the Miami-Nebraska road here. Dabo, this is remarkable what he's trying to pull off.
When no one else is trying to do it that way, and no one else believes you can win doing it that way, he is still, to me, with his head in the sand of what college athletics is today. So,
now, I mean, you know, Georgia's not taking a ton, but when they need them, they're grabbing them.
Same with Alabama. You know, up until this year, they weren't taking a ton, but they went out and handpicked the four or five transfers that they wanted.
So that's our poll question. And it leads into our 8:38 interview with C.W. Lambert.
And normally right now, this is what Trent would do the play of the day. But I am limited in my technological skills in order to get said play to computer where to play it on. There are plenty of things that we could pick from. We could have took a shot from the Masters. There was Kevin Harlan calling a chicken wing last night that might have been one of the best calls I've ever heard.
Some people are saying that should be his Emmy reel. Submit it next year. He's already nominated for this year. Okay, could that seal the win? By the way, we have a late addition to Kevin Harlan's nomination from just the other night. Go. Well, he is really good off script. Remember, was it the squirrel?
He's had so many. The squirrel was fantastic. Any of the streakers that come onto the field. I mean, he does a terrific job seemingly every time something goofy happens when he's on the call.
But, yes, he did play-by-play for Chicken Wing last night. And that's real talent. I mean, anybody can do, you know, post-ups.
Right, a three from the corner.
Breeze.
Great.
Right. Do play-by-play of a chicken wing.
It's crispy. It's delicious. And I might go on the floor and eat it myself because I'm so hungry right now. And that not play of the day is brought to you by Molly Maid, 239-774-5839. See, we have to get the sponsor in nonetheless, David. No matter how we roll, you've got to get the sponsor in. 239-774-5839 for the good folks at Molly Maid. Give them a call. Tell them Miller and Moulton sent you. If you're looking for someone to clean your house, there's no one better than Molly Maid to get the job done. Thanks for listening, Miller and Moulton.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes for the hour. Pat Gerwin to join us at the top of the hour. C.W. Lambert, 1 hour from now. He broke a story late Wednesday about ESPN negotiating behind the scenes with Florida State Clemson to broker a deal to leave the ACC and go to the SEC and share money and keep everything together. We'll talk to C.W. Lambert about that. It does lead to our poll question today, which is, if you're Florida State, which conference would you rather be in, Big Ten or SEC? It's pretty close to a 50-50 vote. Please vote. That Mark Miller, the David Moulton, Miller underscore Moulton on X. But the Masters, obviously, big story this time of year. Jeff Eisenbrand, PGA Tour Live is where you can see and hear him. He's also host of the Eyes on Golf, EIS. See, it goes with Eisenbrand, EIS. See what he did there? Follow Jeff on X at Jeff Eisenbrand. Jeff, it's David and Mark. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me this morning, guys. I was trying to think as you were going through that, what the if you have a Florida State or Clemson player close to the top of the Masters leaderboard. I got to check that.
Well, Koepka. Koepka's a Knoll.
Koepka, Lucas Glover. There's a Clemson guy in there. There's some representation of those two teams.
Right. Well, your thoughts on day one? I mean, you know, early it was wet, and then after that it was windy.
Yeah. You know, this started to be a little bit reminiscent of Los Angeles Country Club last year, how low some of those first-round scores were with Bryson going out and shooting 7-under early. Definitely the conditions toughened up in the later in the afternoon, and then we're going to see apparently a lot of wind the rest of the way. So I think even though you see that low score to start, that doesn't mean that we are going to see low scores throughout the entire week at the Masters.
No, the greens will dry out even more, making them faster, making it a little bit harder to hold the greens, and obviously the winds will do that. But, you know, DeChambeau 7-under, but Scottie Scheffler was 6-under. Once again, yeah, he's a shot off the lead. He's the best player in the world right now, and he showed in day one why, didn't he?
He did, and I mean, there's so many Tiger-esque qualities that people keep talking about with Scottie Scheffler, and I think the best one is the way that he just keeps himself in rounds. I mean, there were no bogeys in that round, and a lot of people have talked about it didn't feel like a dominant round. You know, he was 2-under through the first 11 and then got to that traditional part at the back nine, the holes that so many people recognize, and he just took care of business. Birdies on 12, 13, 15, and 16. If you know the Masters, if you've watched enough, you know those two par fives in the back, 13 and 15, those are the ones that you need to take care of. He always does, it feels like. So Scotty shoots that 6-under round, 4-under on the back, and all of a sudden just catapults himself in the back of that round to having a good first day to, is he just going to start to lap the field this week?
Yeah, and there's a lot of elite players who did not do all that well in the par fives yesterday, either even or 1-under, you know, even 1-over on the par fives, and Scheffler was 3-under. But, Jeff, it's something that you may talk about, but I know Miller and Moulton don't, is that at Augusta anyway, man, is his short game good. Like, when he won it, he was awesome around the greens 2 years ago. And, I mean, those birdies on 12 and 13 yesterday, I mean, come on, nobody makes two from the back bunker on 12, and nobody puts it in Race Creek and makes four.
Yeah, I mean, look, right, the bunker shot on 12, a little bit of luck has to be involved in a shot like that. That's not exactly a putt, but you're right. On 13, to just walk up where it looked like that ball might have been lost, and to just walk up, hit it close, make the putt. It's just that, you know, his game, he does so much, so good. And I was thinking about it coming into this Masters 2 years ago, right? He won in 2022. He had just gotten to world number one. There was a lot of, well, is he really a deserving world number one? Then last year, he gets there after having, a dominant win at the Players' Championship. And again, it's here comes Scottie Scheffler, red hot. And then this third string, you know, in this string of 3 years, he comes in even hotter. Somehow he gets hotter and hotter every year and shows up here in 2024. And it's not just all of that. It's the putting that he has figured out as well. He's got the new mallet putter, the TaylorMade Spider putter. And it's just the entire game has come together in a way that, you know, golf can be so fickle and you're always going to have your bad days, but it just feels like Scottie Scheffler is in a mode these last 2 months or so where there are no bad days. There was maybe one bad putt at the Texas Children's Houston Open, a couple weeks ago that kept him out of a playoff that made him finish T2 and probably made him even hungrier coming into this Masters.
Rory McIlroy has not played well in round one at Augusta for a while. He did shoot 1-under yesterday. Is that a positive he can build on? Or do you look at Rory as, you know, hey, he's five back of Scheffler and, that's too much already?
You know, it was tough watching Rory on that back nine yesterday, playing alongside Scottie Scheffler. And like I said, when they were through 11 holes and they were pretty similar in how they were playing, it didn't look like Rory was being overshadowed, but it just looked like Rory was being overmatched. I went from feeling like playing with Scottie's great for Rory to see, you know, the competition right next to him, to see who will probably be the leader on the weekend right here, to, oh man, I think Scottie's getting in his head on the back. You know, Rory, Rory is always in his head. He's put this tournament in his head for so long. He focused so much this year on playing a lot more golf before the Masters. I think it's too early to tell what Rory's week will be like, but the unfortunate problem are the signs are not there, other than some signs of life. Finishing third last week, it just hasn't been the consistent week that we've become accustomed to, consistent year that we've become accustomed to for Rory McIlroy.
Jeff Eisenbrand, you see and hear him PGA Tour Live. He's host of the Eyes, EIS on Golf podcast. Follow Jeff on X at Jeff Eisenbrand. That's Jeff Eisen as in Rich Brand, B-R-A-N-D. All right, Homa, you know, he's still got more work to do, but 4-under through 13, he has not historically played well here. And for a top 10 golfer in the world the last couple of years, Jeff, Max Homa has a horrible record in the majors. I feel like this would be important for him just to, you know, be in it, if you know what I mean. I mean, be where he is now on Sunday, I think, would be a big stepping stone for Max.
Yeah, for those who, I mean, obviously Max has been coming on over the last couple of years, has gotten himself into consistently being a top 10 player in the world, but his only top 10 at a major championship came in his last start at the Open Championship last year in 2023. I felt like this was it was great to see Max yesterday. People might remember a couple of years ago at St. Andrews 2022, Max and Matt Fitzpatrick played with Tiger in the first two rounds of that Open Championship, and Max and Tiger both did not play well. So this was sort of a second chance opportunity for Max to play in front of his idol at a major championship, gets to do it at the Masters, balled out yesterday, 4-under to this point through 13 holes, made a great birdie putt on the last hole that they played, through 13 holes, on 13, made a great birdie putt, and it just feels like perhaps he's getting his game together. A lot of people have been critical of Max this year that he hasn't had the high finishes he's had in the past, but 5 top 25s this year and 8 starts. He did have a T8 at the Arnold Palmer Invitational out there at Bay Hill. So he's played some decent golf this year. So I think Max may be sneaking up on more people than he should so far in this first round.
Is Tiger playing well, or does Tiger just know this course so well that he was able to get up and down a bunch yesterday? He's 1-under. It's obviously in red numbers. That's a good thing. But I think he only hit 6 of 12 greens or 7 of 13 greens when it was all said and done, but manages to get up and down from just about everywhere.
I think it's a mix, and that's not a dodge of the question. You know, I felt like Tiger's round early looked very similar to the rounds that we've seen him play the last couple of years, where there are some good shots, there are some loose shots, and he has to rely on his scrambling ability to make anything happen. And last year, to be honest, there were more times than not, and even earlier this year when he played the Genesis Invitational, where he wasn't scrambling as well as we've seen him scramble in the past. But he scrambled great yesterday. I do think that you can attribute to some course knowledge. The announcers were talking, Curtis Strange was talking a lot at the end yesterday when Tiger and Jason Day and Max Homa didn't hesitate to finish the 13th hole. And, if there's anyone that could play the course with their eyes closed that can play in the dark, it's Tiger Woods. So I do think that maybe the way he's playing right now, he wouldn't be scoring as well at a course other than the Masters. But I do think it's worth noting that you didn't see the wincing in pain as much. And the scrambling, the ability around the greens, the putting was outstanding. And that's how Tiger Woods at this age is going to have to compete. That's how he's going to have to be working on, because he's not going to be able to strike the ball like Scottie Scheffler and some of the younger guys today.
What do you make of Spieth? I mean, he has a great record here, obviously. Rough start yesterday, doubled one, was 3-over early. He's 2-over through 11 when he resumes his round, or is just resuming it now. But just Spieth in general, Jeff, I mean, he's arguably the most entertaining guy on tour, because he hits it all over the place and he has a running play-by-play commentary while doing it. So, I mean, to me, I want to see every shot he hits. But, man, Jeff, I just don't know if Jordan Spieth's ever going to be Jordan Spieth again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind, think about it. He has been even over his last 10 holes because he double bogeyed the first. So he's straightened out the game a little bit so far, and he's about to hit that patch of play that Scottie Scheffler made 4 birdies on 5 holes on. So Jordan can still put up a decent first round. But I think what makes me nervous about Jordan Spieth's game, you talk about will he ever be – he will probably never return to that 2014 to 2017 run, really, where he was 20 to 23 years old and just every week was showing up and playing some outstanding electric golf. He still shows flashes. I think the unfortunate reality of Spieth is he's become a little bit of a horse-for-course player. Finished, I believe, it was third at the Century this year in Hawaii and Maui, a course that he's played really well in the past, played the Valero Texas Open pretty well last week, a course that he has won and played really well in the past, and now comes to Augusta, and he can show up because he has been probably, you could argue, the best player over the last decade at Augusta National, but it just feels like you can't necessarily drop Jordan Spieth into any course in the PGA Tour, any major venue, and, he can't compete at all of these venues. Just his game has become styled for courses that he's able to spray the golf ball a little bit, to get out of position but get back into position. And, you know, for him to stay relevant in the long run, for him to keep making Ryder Cup and President's Cup team, he's going to have to figure some of that out and make sure his game travels like it used to.
Jeff, do you think the guys going out this morning are trying to get to a number? When you've got a 7 and a 6 under already on the board, do you think guys like Koepka with a few holes to play think they've got to get to, you know, 2 under par, or is it too early for that?
I think it's too early for that. I think it was John Rahm last year. I can't remember if he said it was the first 4 or 5 or 6 holes. He had said, you know, you want to get through a certain amount of holes at the Masters even, regardless of what the leaderboard says. And I just think it's too early because, you know, this leaderboard is going to continue to significantly fluctuate. And what this leaderboard is also going to do is you can't look up and see, you know, the Augusta National will not play consistent for 4 days. And that's not because the agronomy staff won't do a great job. It's just the natural conditions of the course, the wind, the precipitation that we had on Thursday versus the rest of the week, everything is going to change. So we just talked about a guy like Jordan Spieth, who's about to start on the 12th hole, which may be not his favorite hole. He doesn't have the best memories on that hole to start on. But if he goes and plays 13, 14, 15, 16, some of the scoreable holes traditionally, he might be thrilled that he's playing those early holes this morning in these conditions, as opposed to the conditions that he would have played if he played his entire round in the afternoon yesterday. So I think you can't start to look at a number until really, I mean, guys at the Masters probably don't start to look at a number until after Saturday and figure out where they need to be to make a run on Sunday. It's just that type of course.
Jeff Eisenbrand, part of PGA Tour Live and host of the Eyes, EIS on Golf Podcast. Follow Jeff on X at Jeff Eisenbrand. That's Jeff Eisen, E-I-S-E-N, Brand, B-R-A-N-D. Jeff, thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy your Masters. Safe travels. Hopefully we can talk again.
Thanks. And I just want to say real quick, you know, we do a lot of work in the St. Augustine area for PGA Tour Live. That's where our studio is based. And I know that they dealt with, for those listening, I know there was a tornado that came through and there was a lot of damage in that World Golf Village community. So for anyone watching, you know, I hope that everyone stays safe and that everyone's okay. And, you know, those people have been so good to us that I'm wishing the best for them right now.
Classy gesture, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jeff Eisenbrand. And yeah, a tornado in Northeast Florida yesterday, early afternoon, came through and it did real damage to the World Golf Village in St. Augustine. So, and yes, Jeff, JP Shadrick, others broadcast from there many a time. So, Jeff Eisenbrand joining us to talk the Masters.
And they have teed off for finishing round one. At the Masters, we will switch gears and go from golf to the National Football League. Pat Kerwin joins us next on Miller and Moulton.